Conviction of its own. Reason has to master rebellious feelings and instincts, the inhibition of which is supposed to make human cooperation possible. Inhibitions originally imposed from without have to become part and parcel of the individual's own consciousness. This principle already prevailed in the ancient world. What is called process lay in the social expansion of it. In the Christian era, everyone was to bear the cross voluntarily. For those at the base of the social pyramid, however, the harmony between the universal and the particular interests was merely a postulate. They had no share in that common interest which they were asked to make their own. It was never quite rational to them to renounce their instincts, and as a result they never were quite reached by civilization, but were always made sociable by force. This is what dictatorship always has been based upon. The Beati Possidentes, however, rightly regarded the political and spiritual powers as agencies of their own. They fulfilled for themselves the idea of rational civilization, insofar as their sociability was derived from their knowledge of their individual interests. The latter remained the rational criteria for the harmony between the universal and the particular interests. The difficulties of rationalistic philosophy originate from the fact that the universality of reason cannot be anything else than the accord among the interests of all individuals alike, whereas in reality society has been split up into groups with conflicting interests. Owing to this contradiction, the appeal to the universality of reason assumes the features of the spurious and illusory. Reason's claim to be absolute presupposes that a true community exists among men. By denying the reality of universal concepts and pointing to existing reality instead, the empiricists are right as against the rationalists. On the other hand, the rationalists are right as against the empiricists in that, through that it is implied in their concept of reason, they uphold the potential solidarity of men as an ideal against the actual state of affairs in which solidarity is asserted with violence and catastrophe. At the close of the liberal era, however, thinking in terms of mere existence of sober self-preservation has spread over the whole of society. All men have become empiricists. Page 31. The definition of reason in terms of individual self-preservation apparently contradicts Locke's prototypical definition, according to which reason designates the direction of intellectual activity regardless of its external goal. But Locke's definition still holds true. It does not liberate reasons from the atomic self-interest of the individual. It rather defines procedure with more readily suit whatever goal self-interest may require. The increasingly formalistic universality of reason, far from signifying an increasing consciousness of universal solidarity, expresses the skeptical separation of thought from its object. Thought becomes what it was designated to be during the Aristotelian beginnings of empirical science, namely an organon. As a consequence of Locke and Kant, thought no longer conceives the object as they really are, but contents itself with ordering and classifying supposedly pure data. The triumph of nominalism goes hand in hand with the triumph of formalism. In limiting itself to seeing objects as a strange multiplicity, as a chaos, reason becomes a kind of adding machine that manipulates analytical judgments. The object could be regarded as an unqualified mass in philosophy because economic reality has leveled them, rendering all things equivalent to money as the common denominator. In the face of such leveling, the proper being of the object is no longer taken into account. Cognition thus becomes that which registers the objects and proceeds to interpret the quantified expressions of them. The less human beings think of reality in qualitative terms, the more susceptible reality becomes to manipulation. Its objects are neither understood nor respected. The sheer multiplicity of objects has its counterpart in the so-called pluralism of ends, according to which a gulf exists between the scientific judgments and the realm of values. As a result, the value judgment has nothing to do with reason and science. It is regarded as a matter of subjective preference, whether one decides for liberty or obedience, democracy or fascism, enlightenment or authority, mass culture or truth. Freedom of choice, however, has always been the privilege of the small group which enjoyed a life of abundance. For them it was possible to select among the so-called cultural goods, always provided that these goods were in harmony with their interests of dominion. This was the only pluralism of values that materialized. Wherever the values in question affected the base of European society was predetermined. The will to self-preservation of the upper strata of society, though it was rent asunder by competition, unequivocally defined the course of action against slaves, serfs, and masses. The perpetuation of privileges was the only rational criterion which determined whether one should fight against or collude with other interests and groups, maintain constitutional government, or take the step of authoritarianism. Page 32. The great historic decision differed from one another in being far-sighted or near-sighted, not in the nature of their ends. Self-preservation was also at the root of the variety of attributes characterizing individuality. Poise, rank, propriety, gallantry still are what pragmatism mistakes them to be. Habitual forms of the individual adjustment to the social situation. In the distant past, all who behaved at variance with these norms were threatened with loss to class standing. Today, the norms are remnant of those past forms of society in which the individual was lost without them. They still retain the mark of these times, but with the loss of their purpose, they have lost their vigor. As the ornaments and useful objects point to past techniques of production, the imperfection of which they retain as adornments to the now impotent human standard of behavior, inherited from feudal ages, still bear the hallmark of the violence which the lords of the past had to exercise against themselves for the sake of their own adjustment. In the present state of society, these human traits assume the reconciliatory character of the purposeless, but they still adapt themselves very well to prevail ends. The aristocrat who left the domestic market to the businessman attempted instead to conquer the foreign market for him. Aristocrats held their monopoly as warlords for the businessmen until the new technology of war brought about the inevitable alteration. They held it even at a time when bourgeois norms, attitudes, and reaction, such as thrift and integrity, already began to share the fate of aristocratic standards of behavior. The latter owed their glory chiefly to the efforts of the middle class to strengthen its position by glorifying its predecessors. This solidarity with past rulers is derived from a common attitude to the rest of society. Power is made to appear as eternal. One's own prestige is enhanced. It functionaries of the middle class, like Napoleon Bonaparte, find their place in the pantheon of history side by side with other great lords and executioners, regardless of whether they were friends or enemies. At home, the well-to-do imitate what they call style. In their offices, they abide by the standards of business morality, since their class cannot exist without a discipline of its own, as against internal and external competitors and as against the masses. However, they practice that which actually links them to the historical tradition, namely, integral self-preservation. This self-preservation may even call for the death of the individual which is to be preserved. Sacrifice can be rational when it becomes necessary to defend the state's power, which is alone capable of guaranteeing the existence of those whose sacrifice it demands. Page 33. The idea of reason, even in its nominalistic and purified form, has always justified sacrifice. During the heroic era, the individual destroyed his life for the interest and symbols of the collectivity that guaranteed it. Property was the institution that conveyed to the individual the idea that something of his existence might remain after death. At the origin of organized society, property endured while generations passed away. The nomadic individual survived by bequeathing it. Through the legacy, the individual perpetuated himself even after his death. But he did not contradict the principle of self-preservation if he sacrificed his life to the state whose laws guaranteed his legacy. Sacrifice thus took its place as a rational institution. The rationality of sacrifice and self-renunciation, however, was differentiated according to social status. It decreased with decreasing wealth and opportunity and eventually became compulsory. As against the poor, it has always been rational to supplement reason with earthly and heavenly justice. Voltaire admits that reason might triumph for decent people, but the canaille is not made for it. We have never intended to enlighten shoemakers and servants. This is up to apostles, he says. Footnote 12, text. For the masses, the road from one's own interest to that of preserving society was devious and long. In their case, one could not rely upon rational and self-imposed renunciation of distinct or drives. If a Greek slave or a woman had spoken and acted like Socrates, she would have been a fool, not a sage. Socrates, by his death, elevated loyalty to the laws of the state above all else. Within the era of conscience that he initiated, rationality pertained to those who were socially more or less independent. The masses turned to religion, but their doing so did not affect the basic rationality of self-preservation. Rationalism has no right to complain about Luther. The latter called reason a beast and a whore only because at this time reason could not of itself cause the individual to suppress his appetites. The religious reformation trained men to subordinate their lives to more remote ends. Instead of surrendering to the moment, they were taught to learn objective reasoning, consistency, and pragmatic behavior. Man was thus not only strengthened in his resistance to fate, but was also enabled to free himself now and then from the overpowering mechanism of self-preservation and expediency. Such contemplative pauses, however, could not prevent the interest of the prevailing order from spreading its roots in the hearts of men. Protestantism promoted the spread of that cold rationality which is so characteristic of the modern individual. Page 34. It was iconoclastic and did away with the false worship of things, but by allying itself with the rising economic systems, it